Now, with 1,800 teaching posts reported to be vacant this year, the shortage of teachers continues to make an impact on schools throughout the country. The Department of Education says it's going to make it easier for teachers who've trained abroad to be recognised as qualified teachers here. New time-limited measures will allow these teachers to complete a required period of induction in Ireland, but this has to be done by the end of 2027. Teachers' unions have welcomed the move, but say they believe there are more effective ways and that more needs to be done to tackle teacher shortages. Well, the Minister for Education, Helen McEntee, is here in studio. Thanks for coming in to us, Minister. What difference do you hope these new measures will make to teaching numbers?
Well, look, firstly, this is just one of a number of things that I am working on and have introduced since becoming Minister for Education. And I acknowledge that there are certain areas, and in particular in post-primary schools and certain subjects, where we have gaps. We're not the worst off. There's about 2.5% of a gap in our overall teaching posts, and we have less people than most other European countries who are leaving or changing profession. So I don't think we're in a bad place, but I do recognise there are certain posts and certain areas that we need to do more in. The first thing I did was say that we would introduce from next September a change to when teachers can get their permanent position. So instead of 2 years, it's 1 year. And it's something the teachers' unions, the schools, the teachers themselves have said would be very welcome, because it reduces that casualisation within the profession and gives them certainty, not just the teachers, but the schools. This second piece, then, it's a thing that has come to me by a lot of people, and only in recent weeks actually getting more and more questions about it. We had it introduced previously on a shorter, maybe more ad hoc basis. What this is doing now, it will allow teachers who have trained abroad, who have significant experience, a wealth of experience, but just haven't completed that training here, to complete it here, to be in our schools, to fill some of those gaps as well. And what we saw in the past, so where it was open in one instance for about 4 months, you had maybe 95 people applied. Where it was open slightly longer, you had over 100. So the fact that this will be open for 2 years, I would hope will mean that we will see a significant number of teachers applying to the Teacher Council, complete their training here, and obviously filling those posts. But what's really important about the timeline for me, it's about, well, will this work longer term? And I think the 2 year timeline, if I need to extend it, if we need to make it more permanent, that's something that I'm willing to do.
But as you mentioned, it's the fourth time since 2020 that this time limited measure has been introduced. So why not make it permanent? Because the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals say they see no reason why. Why not do that now?
So look, this is, I suppose, an added resource. We need to make sure that we have the capacity within the system to be able to follow through on this. So I'm very open to, after the 2 years, if we can, if there's any more resources that are required or necessary, that we would extend this out. But I do think the 2 year time period is long enough for anybody who's either already in Ireland or thinking of coming to Ireland to be able to take this up. This will open from the 22nd of this month, so this is only in a matter of days where the Teaching Council will be able to start accepting applications, and they will have anybody who applies up to 2 years to apply for this. So when you see that it was open for 4 months and we had 95 or so people apply, the longer this is open, then I think the more people were going to have applying and filling those really critical and those vital roles.
But over the past 5 years that it has opened and closed that window, there's only been 339 teachers granted qualified teacher status. And last March, there were 1,800 vacant teaching posts around Ireland. So this is only going to make a small dent in teacher numbers, really.
Well, look, I mean, if you have seen it open three times in the last couple of years, and in those small windows you had the number that you mentioned, over 300, to have it open for 2 years, I do think that we will make a much larger dent. But again, I go back to the fact that this is just one measure. So again, increasing or reducing the timeline by which teachers can become more permanent is one of them. Introducing this measure, making it quicker and easier for teachers to be able to complete their training here, is another one. Introducing upskilling measures, which is something I've done since coming into this role. So we know that there are certain subjects in certain areas that are more challenging for principals to identify teachers in. So there are now free of charge upskilling programmes in place, whether it's in languages, whether it's around the STEM subjects, science subjects, computer science. So if you have a teacher that is proficient in two areas, they are now free of charge being in a position where they can upskill in a third subject, which doesn't just fill the gap, but it actually adds to their own CV and their employability as well, which is something that they have sought and something I've responded to.
And unions are looking for other measures. They say that returning teachers from positions in private schools outside the EU, like Dubai in Australia, where we know there's a lot of young Irish teachers at the moment, that they're still being placed on the first point of the teacher salary scale. Now, it's estimated there's around 4,500 teachers working abroad. So would changing this not be more effective?
Look, I think on this matter, and it's something I've said I'm very open to exploring, and that's still the case, I think we need to look at, well, what kind of an impact would it have? When you look at the 4,500 or so, and I suppose that's a guesstimate that we have, many of them are young people who are in their early 20s. They're travelling, they're exploring, different parts of the world, they're gaining experience, but many of them also are still registered with the Teaching Council, so they are coming home. And certainly the cohort that I met in Australia this year when I was there for St. Patrick's Day, the vast majority of them wanted to come home. We also know that.
And did they mention pay to you as an issue?
Do you know what? There was lots of things came up when I spoke with them. And in fact, some of them raised some of the challenges in the posts that they actually had in Australia, how it was different in Australia, the roles that they had, the work that they had to do compared to at home.
Why not give this a shot and see if it helps bring more home?
So look, I'm absolutely open to exploring this. But I think it's something that we have to consider carefully. There's obviously a budgetary element to it. We've just had our first budget, but this is the first of many. So you have to take into consideration, is this something that you would apply forward looking? Is this something that you would apply retrospectively? How then would you cut that off? Where does that apply to? So there's lots of things that we need to think through, but it's not to say that I'm opposed to it. I think we just need to look at this in the round on top of all of the other measures that we're exploring at the moment.
Can we look now at another area you were involved in during your time in justice, domestic violence? Your successor, Jim O'Callaghan, is planning a register naming perpetrators of domestic violence if the victim consents. Now, as part of that law, Gardaí will have the power to tell schools when a domestic violence incident has taken place in a child's home, and the child's teacher will be made aware of the situation and can provide support accordingly. Do you know how this is going to work in practice? Will it be the principal, the class teacher, or somebody else within the school who'll be told that information?
So look, I'll be working closely with Minister O'Callaghan on this. And to be honest, this is a scheme that I came across a number of years ago myself when I was in the Department of Justice. It was introduced in Northern Ireland for the first time. And this really is an extra added layer to try and provide support to children who may have either experienced or witnessed domestic violence happening in the home, or may themselves have been victims, who then have to get up and go to school the next day. And it's that there is a level of understanding in the school, be it a teacher, be it somebody who's designated within the school to be given this information, so that if a child is withdrawn, if they're acting out, that people understand what is the reason behind it. So it's about adding that extra layer. Now, it works in a certain way in the UK because they have a certain structure in terms of child protection. We obviously have TUSLA, the Child Support Agency here, and Garda Síochána and our schools. So what we're working through at the moment, and I won't get into the detail of it because I want to work very closely with our schools, with our unions, and making sure we get this right. We need to make sure we have a structure in place that suits our current environment, that suits our agencies.
Because this is a much smaller country here. Would you have concerns about privacy when it comes to this?
Look, I think we have to take all of those issues into consideration, and that's an issue that has been raised with me before, but for me that's part of the problem when it comes to domestic violence. It has always been something that we don't talk about. It's a personal issue. It's something that happens behind closed doors, and I appreciate you don't want to reveal something in a community where it might be a small-knit community. You don't want to embarrass somebody, or you don't want somebody feeling it's their private life being put on show. But when a child is witnessing and experiencing and possibly a victim themselves of domestic violence and then has to get up and go to school the next day, I think it is so important that somebody in that school has an understanding of what they might have gone through, how they might be able to support them. And it mightn't be actually saying anything. It's just understanding, can I put an arm around this child today? Can I be more helpful? Can I understand?
And will teachers get training in that regard?
So again, this is what we have to work through. We have to make sure that this isn't just a measure that we introduce and teachers are told, right, you have to do this. This has to be done carefully in consultation. But what I do know in the north is that we have seen a significant number of referrals, if you want to call them that, made to the schools. And I believe, and it's the first time in particular in our zero tolerance strategy, that there is a greater emphasis on children. And that's certainly something that I wanted to see happen, and certainly something Minister O'Callaghan is following through on as well.
Can I ask you briefly about another education story this week? We heard from Clodagh Farrell, the principal of Staplin Educate Together in Dublin 13. She says she's more than 50 children with autism on her waiting list, and she believes parents are being offered mainstream places for their children as a stepping stone to an autism class place that she says may never appear. And she says that's very disingenuous. She's advising parents to say no to the mainstream and to hold their ground. What do you say to that?
So the first thing here is that it's about providing a place that's appropriate for the individual child. And for some children, that is being in mainstream. 97% of our students attend mainstream classes, and that's a significant proportion within that who have children who have additional needs. But there are children who need special classes, and there are children who need special schools. What we need are options for all of those. Over the last number of years, and I accept we're starting from a very low base, but we have every single year increased the number of special school places that we have. We're increasing the number of special schools while at the same time increasing the supports and the resources that are available available within our schools. And in this year's budget alone, there's 860 extra special education teachers, and but they won't all be in special classes.
Just to clarify, is it the case that if someone accepts a mainstream place, they are dropped down the waiting list when it comes to a specialist class?
So if they accept that place, it doesn't prevent them from them going into a special class.
But are they dropped down the list?
Well, if they take a place in the mainstream, then obviously there are other children who may go before them for the special class. But what I would say is what we don't want is a situation where children who have not even started in school are automatically going into special classes when that might not be the best place for them. I think it's important that we allow children and allow schools and allow parents to see what is the best setting for their children. But it is also about making sure we have enough special class places, we have enough resources in our schools, and we have enough special schools, and that we're putting in place timelines that actually support identifying what is right for children. So this year, myself and Minister Moynihan, my colleague in the department, working with the National Council for Special Education, have brought forward all of our timelines. And this is the important point here, and it responds to the article that you've mentioned. How do we identify much earlier who are the children with additional needs? What are their types of needs? Where do they live? Where are their nearest schools? And how do we identify then much earlier? Where do we need to add extra classes? Where do we need more resources in mainstream schools? And how do we align that? And it's about giving people certainty. It's about talking to parents and providing them with that certainty much earlier on.
Before I let you go, can we talk about the presidential election? The polls suggest this is now Catherine Connolly's election to lose. What's gone wrong in your view in Heather Humphrey's campaign?
Well, you know, firstly, I would say we have a week to go. And as far as I'm concerned, the only important poll is the poll at the end of this week when people come out and vote. And I would encourage everybody to come out and vote. There's a cohort there who are saying they'll spoil their vote. I would encourage you to please consider and reconsider that. This is an election that I believe is one of the most important presidential elections that
and
we will ever have for so many reasons.
Has Fine Gael been fully behind this? Has your party leader been fully behind Heather Humphrey's campaign?
100%. Heather Humphrey's is by far the best candidate. And I'll tell you why, and if you'll just allow me to say this. People have a choice in this. It might not be the choice they thought they would have. It might not be the election they thought they would have. There are two candidates, but people need to choose what kind of a candidate they want. Do they want someone who is honest and upfront in what they do and what they say? Or do we want somebody who says one thing and their actions clearly say the other? I know Heather Humphreys and I also know Catherine Connolly. I've worked with both of them for the last number of years. Heather Humphreys has never changed who she is. She has worked in her community for her community, and in every single role she's had in politics, she has stood up and she has delivered for her community. Catherine Connolly, as we've seen, and I would ask this because she's not responding to questions on this, she has said one thing and her actions have said the complete opposite, whether it's her work as a barrister, working with banks, repossessing homes, and then coming into the Dáil Chamber and absolutely castigating those same people and saying that their behaviour has
Catherine,
been criminal.
Catherine Connolly isn't here to defend herself, but she has confirmed she's worked on behalf of banks and that she's been working within the Bar Council rules in relation to that.
And you know what? And I'm not pushing back on that at all. What I'm saying is, on one hand, she has worked for banks. She has stood in courtrooms where people's homes are being repossessed.
And the Bar, the bar Council says that
a barrister
should not be identified with her clients or their clients' causes or suffer adverse consequences as a result of being so identified. So she was acting by the rules of the Bar Council.
And I'm not saying she's not. What she has done, though, is come into the Dáil Chamber. She's elected, she's been an elected representative, and she has stood in the Dáil and she has castigated those same banks that she worked for and the same people that she worked with and said very clearly
and
that the behaviour that she engaged in was criminal behaviour. But can
point.
I say in another point?
No, can I ask you, because the question is about Fine Gael's campaign here.
Yeah.
This is about Fine Gael's. If Heather Humphreys isn't elected president next week, will that reflect on Simon Harris's judgment?
No, I think Heather Humphreys has run the campaign that is reflective of who Heather Humphreys is. She has been true and honest to what she believes in and what she represents and what this country represents.
But she doesn't seem to have resonated with voters so far. As you say, they are only polls. But should your party have had a contest? Should they have looked at other candidates? Should they have looked at younger candidates?
So we had a contest. Heather Humphreys was the successful candidate and she's the person we've gotten behind, and every single person in the party has gotten behind. But I have to say this, and you have to let me say this. The people of this country have a choice. And I'll take it back to the role that I had before in Brexit. So I worked for 3 years, day in, day out, with many colleagues, including Heather Humphreys, on an issue that was potentially going to be absolutely detrimental to this country, to businesses, to workers, to our economy, but most importantly, the peace process. Heather has been clear of her view on this and her absolute desire to protect people in the face of Brexit. We see how it's impacted the economy in the UK and how it's left their politics in tatters. Catherine Connolly is now saying that she is pro-European and that she didn't agree with this. Her actions previously say something different. She lauded Brexit. She said it was good. She said that anybody who spoke out against it, they were fear-mongering. I want somebody who's not going to say one thing and their actions say
and
another.
And you mentioned fear-mongering
Heather's campaign
there. Catherine
has
Connolly
always
has
highlighted
consistently
that.
Accused Fine Gael ministers of lying out to smear her campaign. Is that what we're seeing here again?
Well, do you know what? Heather Humphreys has been asked questions on many difficult issues and she's answered every single one of them.
Catherine Connolly would say she's also answered her questions too.
Well, she hasn't. In fact, she spent the last week dodging questions around her role in repossessing people's homes when she has then come into the Dáil Chamber and absolutely castigated the same banks and the same people she
Catherine
worked with
Connolly
as engaging in criminal behaviour. There's a contradiction and there's a hypocrisy there.
And
I'm saying Heather Humphreys
is not here to defend herself, but she would say that she has been absolutely honest in answering all of her questions. Helen McEntee, Minister for Education, thank you for joining us on This Week. We'll be back after this break.